How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast here, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through news and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and professors. My guest today is Ellen Matloff. She's the president and CEO of My Gene Council. And a disclaimer, I also work for Ellen at My Gene Council as the communications lead. Ellen is the founder and former director of the Cancer Genetic Counseling Program at Yale School of Medicine. She's authored more than 50 scientific publications in this field, is an established educator, lecturer, and media spokesperson. She's received national awards for her ongoing patient advocacy efforts. She's outspoken in these areas, most notably as the plaintiff in the 2013 BRCA gene patent case that went before the Supreme Court. And this decision has led to drastically lower prices of genetic testing, which has made it possible for more patients to afford this technology as opposed to years in the past. Ellen's also a Forbes.com contributor in the area of genetic counseling, testing, and digital health. As genetic testing becomes more common and also more complex, she's served as the senior author on several publications since 2010, all documenting errors in the interpretation of genetic test results from all over the US and Canada. From these experiences, Ellen created My Gene Council and its associated digital tools, which can be used in parallel with genetic testing to help ensure that results are used accurately and effectively. These tools are scalable, affordable, and available to the consumer immediately on their own device, and most importantly, when your genetic test results are reclassified, and we'll get into what that means, along with medical management recommendations changing, you can receive a text message or email letting you know of these changes. And again, we're going to explore this further on today's episode with Ellen, along with more information and her thoughts on direct consumer genetic testing. So thanks so much, Ellen, for joining me on this episode. I'm excited to be talking about direct consumer genetic testing with you.
Thank you, Kira. Me too.
So for some background information, what are direct consumer tests and what are the types that are available to consumers?
So really, the definition of a direct-to-consumer test is any test that a consumer, a person, can take themselves without the involvement of a medical professional. And there are many direct-to-consumer tests. Many people are probably the most familiar with a pregnancy test that you can just buy at a drugstore and take it yourself without the involvement of a healthcare provider. And in the genetics space, we first started seeing direct-to-consumer testing about 14 years ago. And one of the best-known companies was 23andMe, that you could go online, order your own kit, it would be sent to your home, you could spit in it, send it back, and get some genetic information that way.
And what is the difference if we're looking at these direct consumer genetic testing? You mentioned pregnancy tests is probably what people are familiar with. What's the difference between the medical grade genetic testing that people are familiar with in terms of going to a genetic counselor or a physician and having them order it versus the direct consumer genetic testing like the 23andMe, like the Ancestry? What is that difference between them?
So it's a complicated question because the field of direct-to-consumer genetic testing also has a lot of variability. But for example, when someone used to come see me at Yale and they wanted to know if they carried a genetic change or mutation within BRCA 1 or 2, I was a certified genetic counselor who would explain the pros, the cons, the limitations of testing. I would do insurance verification. I would take a blood or a saliva sample and send it to a medical grade company whose standards I understood. And so for BRCA 1 and 2, we were really looking at all areas of those genes where if there were a finding or a mutation found, it would have significant clinical implications. And then the results would come back to me as the healthcare provider, and I would provide the results to that patient. But now, with some of these direct-to-consumer companies, they may be giving people either just partial information or information that they say themselves, this is not, this raw data is for your information only. It does not provide full coverage of all of the genes, and they don't stand behind it in terms of claiming it's clinical grade information. And then there are other direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies that provide almost clinical grade information, or some of them would say they provide clinical grade or medical grade information. So there's a huge range of variability.
And how accurate, to give you another complicated question, how accurate are these direct consumer tests that people are getting? If they're getting a certain result, do we know that that result is actually accurate, or could it be a wrong result? And then there's also the interpretation of that. So I guess there's different layers.
Yeah, there are a lot of different layers. So for example, I hear a lot of people saying, oh, I did 23andMe and I'm BRCA negative. And when you dig a little deeper, 23andMe is only reporting back at the moment the three common Jewish variants or mutations within BRCA1 and 2. There are thousands and thousands of mutations in those two genes. And if you are Jewish and you don't carry one of the three common Jewish mutations, you could still carry other mutations in the gene. If you're not Jewish, then that finding for most people is essentially meaningless. And so, you know, that's one example. Another example is people downloading their raw data from Ancestry.com or 23andMe or one of the other companies and having it uploaded and interpreted by a third party. And they may find out, based on that interpretation, that it looks like they may carry a mutation in BRCA1 or 2 or one of these thousands of other genes. But what we know is that when you take a new DNA sample and repeat that test in a medical grade laboratory, that quite often you find out that initial finding was wrong. Now, a lot of times you find out it was right, but you're not always getting full coverage of the gene. And like I said, this raw data is not intended for clinical use, and they don't stand behind it. And there are errors in that raw data. So you really need to figure out from there, does this count or was this a mistake?
And so consumers should be really aware of this when they're getting a result, to take it with a grain of salt, that this may not actually be accurate. It could, as you said, but it's not as accurate as the medical grade testing that you're talking about. So if they get a result that, as you said, to use BRCA as an example, that if they're getting a variant in a BRCA result, it would behoove them to go for medical grade testing after that. Is that a good move to either confirm or say this actually wasn't an accurate test?
So I would say if you get a result like that, take it with more than a grain of salt, because up to 60% of the time it could be accurate. And if you're doing a 23andMe test with the results they return, like the three common Jewish mutations, quite frankly, it's probably accurate. So I would say if you get a test result either through raw data or through 23andMe, yes, take it a step further now and speak to a certified genetic counselor or a medical provider who understands this area, which frankly, that's going to be hard to find, but know that there are genetic counseling services available by phone, and there are genetic counselors who specialize in this area. So help is available. And as you know, Kira, we also now have help for some of these consumers at MyGeneCounsel.
Definitely. And for those that want to find a genetic counselor, you can literally go to findageneticcounselor.com, which is an awesome tool to have at your disposal. We will get more into MyGeneCounsel, but before we get there, what is your advice for that consumers should know before they're choosing a DTC test? You say, think before you spit. Can you elaborate on that?
I can, and I've written a few pieces on this, and we also had a guest genetic counselor, Brian, come on to really explain to our viewers what to look for, because I think there are several things. First of all, it depends on why you're doing the test. Ask yourself that question. If it's because you have a personal or a family history of a disease and you're trying to get more information, this is probably not the best route for you to go. It probably makes more sense for you to speak to a certified genetic counselor and find out what test you need, what lab you should use, if you can use insurance, and if your insurance will cover it. That would be the better route. If you're doing it for fun or for kicks, at least know the privacy implications. And again, we've detailed this in a couple of articles, but there are privacy implications. And we've seen that once your data is out there, you can never take it back. And you should know the risks and the limitations of making that decision. If you're doing it as a family finder, which I know a lot of people are, particularly people who are either adopted or only know part of their family history and they just want to know more about themselves, I think that's a fine reason to use the tool, as long as you know that you may learn some things that you weren't looking for. I read a really poignant story recently about a man who ordered kits for his entire family, his two adult children, himself and his wife. And what they learned was that his children were not biologically his children. That, you know, 18 years before, his wife had had an affair, and it really devastated their family. And so just know going into this that you may get some information that you are not prepared for.
And it is hard to prepare for the unknown because a lot of different things could come up, and that's a decision you're making when you're going for this type of testing, that you may find out you have a family member you didn't know about, or a family member you thought you're biologically related to, like you said, you aren't related to.
Correct.
And what are a couple examples of when a direct consumer test may be more appropriate than a medical grade test? Is it really, as you said, like for the adoptee community, and when it's just, you know, you're looking for that entertainment piece, or are there other parts that it's like, you know what, direct consumer tests might be a better fit for you?
So I would also say that for someone with a personal or a family history, for example, of cancer, who doesn't meet medical criteria, so their insurance is not going to pay for them to get covered, that some of them consider direct-to-consumer testing from a company like Color Genetics that provides good testing and good information, although it may not be as complete in some areas as some of the medical grade tests. I think in that situation, if you're going to be paying out of pocket, that's one option to pursue.
And you've taken kind of a, not maybe a 180, but maybe not that quite severe on direct consumer testing that we've talked previously. And you've said 6 years ago, you had a very different approach and thoughts about direct consumer. But now with so many people and consumers using this, healthcare providers and genetic counselors need to be including this in what they're teaching and educating people. What are your like thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, 6 years ago, I was not in favor. And I went and spoke at a consumer genomics conference in Boston. And I was kind of set up, to be honest with you. They didn't tell me that I would be the only person on the panel talking about the privacy issues and the consent issues. And my stance was very unpopular. And pretty much everyone at that conference either was involved in a direct-to-consumer company or investing in one, and they were all on board. And when I was saying, like, look, we should do this through genetic counselors, they pretty much threw tomatoes at me. And that was my wake-up call that, like, oh, the train has left the station. People are already doing this. And genetic counselors, in order to be helpful, have to really learn this field in order to guide consumers. And that was a major wake-up call for me, that I find a lot of genetic counselors, geneticists, and clinicians are still not there 6 years later. I was just at a conference a few months ago, and the level of denial in the room about this really surprised me. People just still don't want to hear it.
Their patients are doing it. We, as genetic counselors, need to be educated on how it works and how we can properly educate people so that they're not doing this testing on their own necessarily and not having the genetic counseling community behind them.
I completely agree with you, Kira, and I think many of these consumers are reporting that they tried to bring their results into their physician or into their healthcare provider or even into their genetic counselor, and that their results were thrown in the trash and that there was an eye roll and people were irritated with them. This is not how we need to approach this topic. Like, we really need to like buck up and realize that this is happening and we need to help these people and be part of the movement.
And for those that are hesitant on the consumer end of sending in their sample of, you know, putting their spit in the tube and sending it off to, say, 23andMe, why is this kind of irrelevant in terms of privacy concerns if someone doesn't want their information out there?
I don't think it's completely irrelevant, but I think it's partially irrelevant, and I'll tell you why. When the Golden State case was announced last spring, and for those of you who don't know, this was a serial murderer and rapist in California in the 70s and 80s. And he had left some DNA at his crime scenes that had been kind of, from what I've heard, haphazardly thrown into envelopes and specimen containers and thrown into a file cabinet in a room. And years later, someone had the idea, which was brilliant, of sequencing that DNA and uploading it to a publicly available database. And through that database, they were able to take this cold case. There were no leads on the case for decades. And they were able to find some of his relatives. And even though he'd never had genetic testing, they were able to trace him through basically the branches of his family history all the way back to a few people it could be. And I guess it was between him and another male in his age group, but who didn't match the physical description of the person who committed the crimes. And they were able to collect some of his DNA, which he left in a public space. So maybe he spit out gum or spit on the sidewalk. They collected his DNA and found a match and were able to arrest him.
Which and is mind-blowing when you think of all the bioethical considerations going into this of where our laws are at, how fast the genetics are moving. I mean, there's so many things. We could do a whole episode just on that.
Mind-blowing. And, you know, I wrote an article, as you remember, Kira, called Why This Genetic Counselor Was Up All Night. And, like, I was talking to my husband about it. I could not shut up about it. And I said, like, oh, my God, you don't understand what this means. And I think people were saying things on social media like, well, unless you have committed a crime or you have a relative who has, who cares? They're not getting it. They're not getting all of the ways in which your genetic information could be used without your consent in ways that you had never imagined. And so I think it's partially irrelevant because right now for all of us, your DNA is already in one of those publicly available databases, or I should say one of your relatives' DNA is already in one. And that's most likely. When you send your own DNA in, you should still think about it because now it will be traced to your name and your identifying information. And you'll be getting information back that you may or may not want about you. So you should still give it a lot of thought. But in terms of the family DNA, it's already in there.
Yeah, people are uploading it that may not even be close to you. It could be your great aunt that's super into genealogy and ancestry. And she's creating these family trees online that include multiple generations. And your name could be in there.
Yep.
Definitely a big concern and one that hard to control unless you're really close with your family and say, I don't want this information out there.
Kira, I don't even think that matters because even if it's a third cousin of yours that you've never met and you've never even heard of, they've already uploaded it. And, you know, I speak at the Yale Bioethics Summer Institute every year. And this summer, there are people from all over the world and people were saying, well, what could we do if we didn't want our family's information in one of these databases? And I said, yeah, it's probably too late. And they were horrified at that answer. But that's that's the real answer. It's probably too late.
And I think Brianne Kirkpatrick, who you mentioned earlier, has been on the show, and she'll be on the show talking about a new project of hers soon, that she said, I believe on the Today Show, you might correct me if I'm wrong here, that it's too late. You can't necessarily control these things anymore.
I agree with her, and she really brings so much expertise and experience to the table. We're lucky to have her in the field.
Yeah, she's awesome, especially for the adoptee community that we've talked about on the show before and everything. But switching gears to my Gene Council, if a consumer has, you know, one of these direct consumer tests or even a clinical test, why would they want to sign up for my Gene Council? How would it help them? What are you offering people?
My Gene Council basically offers a digital solution, and it's not the entire solution. We don't replace in-person genetic counseling or a consultation with your healthcare provider. But what we do provide is linked information by your gene and your variant to streams of digital genetic counseling content that we've built out now over years with genetic counselors and consumers. So, for example, let's say that you carry a BRCA1 variant. You can come to My Gene Council now, and we have that product available. You can upload your test results. It links you by gene and by variant to a stream of information. And every time that information updates, you receive a notification by email or by text. So that could mean medical management recommendations change. It could mean there's a clinical trial for which you may qualify and you can learn more about it. It could mean there's a conference in your area. It could mean the outcome data are needed and you can answer a few questions on your phone and actually contribute to scientific research. It could also mean that there's a policy, a public policy or a legislative update that may affect you. So for example, for a lot of people at high risk to develop ovarian cancer, one of the things that they're given is birth control pills or oral contraceptives, which greatly reduces their risks of these cancers. So for some of the legislative findings that are saying your employer will no longer have to pay for your birth control, it's not just birth control, it's cancer reduction for them. And so you would get that legislative update, and you would also have an action item that you could sign a petition, or you could vote in a block to help us move legislation more in favor of those of us in the genetics community.
It's like having a personal assistant looking at what your specific variant is and seeing all the ways in your life that you can either be making a change or be contributing to something. That there's just so much information you're providing to people personalized, not just, oh, this is something in general that doesn't affect you. It's all about what is their variant and how it can affect their life.
That's right, Kira. And we also match it by laboratory. So if you've done 23andMe and you've learned your BRCA result that way, you get one stream of information. If you've done it by uploading your raw data, you get a different stream of information. If it's a medical grade test, you get a different stream of information. And we keep people informed so that even if you've had genetic testing and genetic counseling, but you did it a year ago or 5 years ago, or maybe even 20 years ago, and you've never gone back for an update, the field has changed a lot. And this impacts you and family members and, you know, friends and relatives, and this keeps you updated.
For someone that's actively involved in, say, the BRCA community, such as a BRCA patient advocate, and they're constantly reading new information, new articles that are coming out, new research publications, and they're super on top in the field, why would they benefit from coming to My Gene Council as opposed to someone that is just starting to get into the community?
I'm so glad you asked that, Kira. And I agree, there are a lot of super advocates out there who, frankly, they are tweeting out about some of these findings at 6 a.m. while I'm still like wiping the sleep from my eyes.
And they've got so much passion. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy. I love it.
One of the advocates, Lisa Gazzardi, this is a true story, tweeted out that a paper of mine had been published. That is how I learned that it hit the journal that day. And
no
I got
way.
The email from the journal 3 hours later.
That's amazing. I mean, patient advocates just amaze me all the time, especially those that have a child with a rare disease or something that you cannot find more passionate people, I feel like.
I could not agree with you more. And so what we're doing is with these super advocates, we're giving them a place where they can go in as a user and say, you know what? You forgot this question. In fact, we just had this happen with one of our BRCA streams that the woman said, you know, you say that you can ask a genetic counselor for a family letter template to like let your family members know that there's a mutation in the family. But why don't you just provide one right here on the site where we could download it? And so we changed that and we took her suggestion. It was a great one and we downloaded it. But you see, these people are paying it forward. They're taking their vast knowledge in the field and they're making the experience better for the next person to sit in that seat. And so that is why the advocates are such an important part of our process, because they're helping form the product for the next person. And part of the reason they're doing it is that they also want the numbers involved in My Gene Council so that we'll have more strength to vote for legislation and for other policy changes in insurance and in coverage as a block. And that's why they're involved.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Of you mentioned earlier of, you know, potential legislation implications, to not only have people be, you know, you're uploading this information and they're receiving it, not only that really one-way stream, but to have a larger ripple effect of impacting legislation decisions and educating your specific legislators of, say, we're both Connecticut-based, but even all the way in California, or I would think in different countries of expanding out for looking long-term, but even clinical trial recruitment and creating voice for genetic communities. I mean, I could go on and on of all the potential avenues that this could be affecting.
Well, absolutely. And think of it this way. If there were 10,000 of us, right, or let's say there are 10,000 BRCA1 carriers on the system, and they all felt like, wow, there really isn't much research being done around, pick a topic. It could be safe hormone replacement therapy, and no one is really seeing how this is impacting BRCA carriers. We can then approach researchers and say, we have this many people interested in this topic, and we also have access to helping you get funding. So please come and study our community. So you can see with drug companies, this gives us great leverage. It's strength in numbers.
And it's a very exciting time to be doing all of this, and with all of the breakthroughs we're experiencing, not only in Connecticut, but, you know, throughout the world of everything we're doing. Want to make sure that we let people know where they can find My Gene Council.
Well, thank you. You can go to mygenecouncil.com. And the BRCA 1 and 2 products are available now, soon to expand to all of cancer genetics and then cardiac genetics, as well as APOE. So those are the products that are currently here and will be expanding further in the coming months.
A lot of new communities to be joining. And so I'm looking forward to seeing where this is going to be going, and just such a bright future ahead for My Gene Council. And you're such an inspiration. I'm very glad we got to, you know, have this conversation on the show and learn more about direct consumer, but also how My Gene Council fits into genetic testing and genetic counseling and all of the areas beyond that.
Well, thank you, Kira. It's fantastic to be here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Be sure to check out mygenecouncil.com. Again, that's mygenecouncil.com for more information that we've discussed today, including our blog post section with some really great resources for students and patient advocates. We have information about becoming a genetic counselor, along with featuring patient stories. My Gene Council is also very active on social media, so you can head over to Twitter. We're at My Gene Council, same as Facebook, so at My Gene Council. To listen to all episodes of this show, head over to dnapodcast.com. There's over 90 episodes with many more to come. There's also blog posts with extended information from episodes. You can follow on Twitter at dnapodcast. On Instagram, it's at dnaradio, which I've been more active than usual on there. So head over to Instagram at dnaradio. And any questions that you have for myself or Ellen can be sent into info@dnapodcast.com. And that includes if you just like the show and you want to reach out and say hi. Love hearing your feedback and ideas. I'd also love to see more rates and reviews on iTunes. It's really quick and easy, so head over there now to give the show some love. Thanks for listening, guys, and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.